Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of the Each One Reach One show hosted by The Vouch System. Today we are blessed to be joined by Dr. Esbernard Klinkscale, graduate of Xavier Bonnaire University School of Medicine, who plans on specializing in anesthesiology and pain management. Originally from Greenville, South Carolina, Dr. Klinkscale is also a proud graduate of Florida State University and a member of Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, as well as Christian Faith Outreach Ministries. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Klinkscale. How are you?
Doing well this morning. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Certainly, certainly. You know, I've known you for quite a while, you know, going back to when I knew that you always wanted to be practicing medicine. How long have you known that yourself?
Medicine for me was put in my heart at the age of 13 years old. But not only was it put in my heart that I wanted to practice medicine, but it was put in my heart that I wanted to be an anesthesiologist. And the common question that I've always been asked is, what does a 13-year-old know about anesthesiology? And it's weird, and it's actually, you know, I really can't even tell you wasn't a 13-year-old knows about it, because I know I didn't know. It's a funny story how all that happened. I did know that I wanted to be a physician, but I wasn't sure exactly what kind. And I used to watch a lot of TV, as I still do. And I remember there was one episode I was watching Living Single, and Khadijah's character, who was Queen Latifah, was dating an anesthesiologist played by Isaiah Washington. And when I heard about anesthesia during that episode, I had no idea what it was. So there was no internet at the time. So I remember after the episode, I had a set of encyclopedias at home. So went to the books, started looking up anesthesia, reading up on it, and I just found it so fascinating. And I remember the next day at school going into the library and then just doing some more research on it and just reading and reading. And at that moment, I was like, this is it. And it hasn't wavered since I've been 13 years old. I'm 31 now. And it hasn't changed, even going through medical school and doing rotations and looking at other specialties. I've had other physicians say, you know, with Bernard, you'll be great doing this specialty or going into this field. But none of them have just sparked my interest like anesthesiology has. And that's where my heart's been, and that's where I feel like it'll always be. So, that's how that all came into being, right?
Okay, wow. Well, the power of, I guess, television still reigned 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
And the images that, you know, kids see on television, it's a positive sign. You know, nowadays, I don't know if the images that a lot of kids see may portray doctors and engineers, lawyers, professionals, in that matter, you know, maybe more Britney Spears or Lindsay Lohan types, but, you know, let's not digress
right
there.
Right.
I know you did suffer an injury, knee injury back in high school, your basketball playing days, that shortened, or else you would have probably ended up in the NBA and anesthesiologist as well. But how did that injury kind of impact, you know, maybe your career and your path, a long life.
Well, that's a great point that you brought up too. Basketball was my first love growing up. I started playing organized ball around 5 years old, and it continued on throughout. I played AAU ball, traveling throughout the country, playing against the country's best in tournaments all over the country. And my senior year in high school, I tore my anterior cruciate ligament, which is also known as the ACL, which is one of the main ligaments that kind of stabilizes your knee. I tore my right ACL in my senior year of high school during a Christmas term. So I missed the bulk of the season because we'd only had a few games prior to Christmas, and then I missed, you know, the season after that. I did want to play collegiate ball. Me having an injury of that nature kind of killed a lot of that as far as me getting any offers or any potential scholarships. So ended up going to Florida State. I planned on walking on. I remember being in the gym playing basketball. This was around October. I still had a brace on, was still kind of going through rehab. Backing up, when I tore my ACL, I actually tore it the day before my 18th birthday. So it was pretty devastating when you go to the doctor's office the next day on your 18th birthday and you have a physician saying, Ms. Springfield, I apologize, but your high school basketball career is now over. You will no longer be playing the rest of the season. So that was pretty devastating. But fast-forwarding on back to October of that same year, the following year, still rehabbing down at Florida State, freshman, in the gym, working out, shooting some basketball, playing a pickup game, going for a loose ball, trying to save it before it goes out of bounds, plant my left foot before the ball goes out of bounds, and it just buckled on me. And as soon as I fell, I knew what happened, so I ended up tearing my left ACL as well in October of my freshman year in college, and that just kind of put an end to the whole college idea that I was going to play basketball as well. And, you know, I just kind of looked at it, all right, that was God's way of saying, you know what, let's go ahead and buckle down on these books. Let's go ahead and get into medical school. You'll just be a fan of collegiate sports and the professional sports from here on out. You know, we'll make sure you can get some tickets every now and then. But as far as having that dream or that fantasy come through, God was like, yeah, we can't make that happen for you. We got something else in mind. So
Absolutely. That's
all that worked out as far as collegiate sports and the professional career. That didn't happen.
Well, God has always a silver lining, and he had a plan for you. Thank God that he blessed you with multiple talents and skills. I do remember that injury that you did suffer in the first year of college.
Right.
You know, prior to that, I mean, you were holding your own in the same Leach gym.
Right. The good old Leach gym, absolutely. Playing with Florida State's best and elite, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, those used to be wars and battles, man. Sometimes the football team, the whole basketball team would come out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, those are some great times. I mean, I can't deny I've been on a couple posters. You know what I'm saying? You turn your head for a second and you get caught underneath in the hole, and it just happens the best of us. But I've definitely held my own as well while I was there. But great times. Some of those days I'll never forget.
Certainly. I think back then I remember one specific gentleman on the football team, Anquan Bolden, probably had the biggest mouth on the basketball court in the Leach, and. Oftentimes it would end up, you know, his team would probably win because he would score, you know, half the points, but it was still
nonetheless
fun to talk trash with somebody, you know, that ends up going into the NFL, but in their own right was all right, decent basketball player.
right, exactly. And, you know, that's just kind of how it was. That was the environment we were around. We were around some of the best athletes in the country, and our football team was, you know, just come off of a national championship the years that I was there. So, I mean, we were definitely had a target on our back from an athletic standpoint, and everybody was looking at us. So, we played against some of the best athletes in the country during my time there at Florida State. Great time.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about a little bit of maybe your college year. How was your college year down at Florida State? And, of course, we were schoolmates, classmates. So, but, you know, what were some of those experiences like?
My college years, you know, I honestly say that, you know, I was raised by my parents. My parents raised me here in Greenville, South Carolina, but I became a man down at Florida State University. And that's kind of where I learned to become more independent, kind of be on my own. I am an only child. So I was kind of raised to be independent anyway. But going down and being away from home, not being able to pick up the phone, to call mommy and daddy, just like that, you know, you kind of learn to become independent and be your own person and start to become, you know, become of age. And so all of that, Florida State, my time at Florida State taught me all of that. And it was a great time. I mean, it was definitely the best 4 years of my life, hands down, without question. I got into I got into a lot of organizations on campus. But at the same time, while everybody else might have been, you know, partying and doing that and doing their thing of that nature, I made sure that I stayed focused on the books. Now, you know, you go to college, you experience a lot of things. And, you know, I'm not even going to sit here and deny that I did get my share of partying in, because I did. But at the end of the day, before I walked through those doors of Florida State and while I was there, I definitely made sure that I knew why I was there. I was there for a bigger purpose. I was there to go to medical school and do what I had to do. And so I never lost sight of that. And a lot of times that I know that kept me on track, because I knew when other people were out doing other things, I was like, no, I got to, you know, I got work to do. I got to dance. Bernard, you want to come away with us for the weekend? I would love to, but I got something going on Monday I need to study for and this and that. Looking back, do I regret anything? Absolutely not. Sometimes I wish that I should have gone a little bit harder than what I did. But Everything worked out the way that it was supposed to. Still ended up graduating from Florida State. Still ended up getting into medical school. Still graduated from there. So I'm extremely pleased the way things turned out, and especially my 4 years down there in Tallahassee.
Absolutely not. I'm not persistent. Please, for you to come party every day of the week. As a young man, turn those down. Otherwise, we may have a different conversation.
Right.
We may have a different conversation.
Right. Absolutely.
So God bless that. But at any rate, you ended up for medical school doing what some young people actually I've heard do quite a bit and go across seas.
Right.
What led to that, and how was that experience?
That experience was an experience. The school that I went to, the medical school that I started out, was actually not the medical school that I ended up graduating from. So in order to get into medical school, you have to take the medical college admission test, which is also known as the MCAT. And they kind of, you know, you take your test and they have an average of what the average students are making and this and that. And I'm sure that number goes up every year as the competition continues to get more stiff, that number, that average continues to rise. Well, for me, I was never a great standardized test taker. You can go all the way back and look at some of my PSATs and SATs in high school. They weren't as great as you thought maybe like a physician should be, or even on just on a national average scale, it wasn't where it was supposed to be. It wasn't where it was supposed to be. However, I always had a GPA that was competitive for anybody. So because of my MCAT not being as high as it was supposed to be, I wasn't accepted into any American schools. And so my determination to be a physician was just so strong, I wasn't going to let that stop me. So I started looking at other opportunities. And that's how going into medical school in the Caribbean came up. And during that time, the stigma was still somewhat strong about Caribbean schools, that they'll let anybody in and that you're not getting the same quality education as you are in the States. Well, you know, a lot of that is not true. You have physicians who have, if you go to a hospital now, you have physicians who have trained all over or went to a medical school, although you don't know where people are coming from now. And people who come in from other countries and practiced and went to school, but ended up doing residency or something in the States, and that's pretty much what it comes down to. So as I was asking around, asking other physicians and asking other people who could advise me on what to do, they said, Bernard, you just need to go somewhere where you can get in. And so I ended up going to St. Matthew's University, which is in Grand Cayman Island, and did my 2 years of basic sciences over there. trained and whatnot. The experience over there was great. Just living in the island, not too many people can say they've done that.
I bet.
Yeah, the island itself was great, very laid back, not a lot of crime, very Americanized. So I didn't feel like I felt like I was at home. Expensive, definitely added to that that six-figure debt that I've now in the medical school. But you know, the overall experience, I wouldn't trade it for anything. So that's where I started. And after your first 2 years of medical school, you're forced to take a board exam, which will let you continue on in the final 2 years of medical school. And once again, like I said, board exams have never really been my specialty. And so I had issues passing my board exams. I've taken it multiple times. And the thing with St. Matthew's at the time had a policy where you had 1 year or at least three attempts to pass your board exams. And if you did not pass, then either they would kick you out or you have to voluntarily withdraw, which would look better on your transcript. So when my time came up to take my boards, I had to withdraw because I was unable to pass it within that required year time span. So ended up transferring to another school, continuing on with the final 2 years. Eventually did pass my board exam, and eventually ended up graduating. So, okay. You know, things did work out. They weren't the traditional path that the average physician may have taken, especially going overseas and definitely having issues that I had getting past my wards. But, I mean, it's kind of made me appreciate things more. It's kind of let me know that this is definitely God's will and this is where I'm supposed to be doing medicine and practicing medicine. And we're just striving on. We just got to go and get a resident physician now and continue to do his work and continue to lead people to the Lord, whether it's through pain management or, you know, healing in multiple aspects of the body or just whatever aspect he would want me to be a witness to people in. I really think that's been my calling, and that's what has kept me on the path of being the physician that have gotten me over those hurdles and obstacles that I had during med school and prior to getting into med school.
Right. Well, what a testimony. You know, maybe 99% of people may have given up. That's
right.
Somewhere along the road, but I guess God had a special plan for you.
Absolutely.
And he wanted you to see it and travel the way that you traveled to get
right
to where you are now.
Right.
I know there's pretty much some, you know, people out there, whether they're young, middle-aged, but that are feeling discouraged because they have that same burning passion to enter the medical field but have been faced with some kind of roadblocks or challenges
right
along the way. Any pointers or any, you know, I guess, words that you may want to offer to people in that position right now?
For the people who are either trying to get into medical school or whether or not even necessarily medical school, whether it's law school, whether it's business school, some type of secondary school or whatever, I think the best thing is to try to reach out to somebody who has been there and who can kind of advise you on how to proceed, and especially if you're having hurdles and obstacles that keep coming up that may be either preventing you from getting in or may be hindering you from getting to where you want to be. The best thing, in my opinion, is to reach out to somebody who has been through the fire and kind of knows what you're going through. I think those are, that's really the best pointer. If you have a dream, stick to it. Like I said, the way I graduated and the way I ended up where I am was not the traditional path by any means. It took me a little longer to get through school, but I got through. It took me a couple of times extra to get through my board exams, but I got through. It even took me, I didn't even get in, you know, into medical school on my first go around. It took me 2 years to get into medical school. So the thing is, keep going. Keep going. If that's what you desire to do, if that's what you feel has been put in your heart or what you have been led to do, whatever dream that is, don't let anybody discourage that. You definitely will have people who are going to come into your life who are going to try and dissuade you from doing what you want to do. So you just have to stick to it and just continue to pray, continue to maintain, ask God if this is the direction that you want, that you want Him for, that He wants you to go in. Because definitely he will definitely close doors and close windows if that's not the right path for you. But at the same time, if it is, certain opportunities will come about that you know it was only God, that you know He only, there's nobody else, and there's nothing else that could have made this happen but Him. And so just stick to it and continue to pray and just continue to have the faith that, you know, He's going to work everything out and just see your dream through. And that's really the biggest thing, is to make sure you stay in the course and see it through.
Well, those are definitely some good pointers. Keep striving, make some links with people that are, you know, in the position that you want to be in. And grit and determination that God has instilled in every one of us to just overcome any obstacle. You know?
Right.
For a brief period, I guess, after medical school, you actually taught. Was it second and third graders?
That was right before medical school. That was prior to, after graduating from undergrad from Florida State, and then during those 2 years that I was trying to get into medical school, I ended up working at the mall my first year out of college just because I was just so mentally tired. I didn't want any job that was too demanding. You know, I was going to have to put in a whole lot of work. So I worked at the mall, worked at Dillard's, and Lady's Shoes.
I remember that.
Right. I was told everybody I was getting my Al Bundy on. So I was selling Lady's Shoes at Dillard's. So, you know, which was, it was all right. But, so that last year, right before I entered medical school, I ended up teaching second and third grade special education students with special needs. And, you know, I think about these kids often. I really do. Even though it's been years since I've seen them or taught them, I haven't seen any of them since the last day I walked out of class. Don't really know how any of them are doing, but I do think about them often. I still have our class picture that's in my room. So I even get to see them, I see a reminder of that and kind of look at where I was and to where I am now, just as far how life goes. And I think the biggest thing about teaching those kids, how just rewarding it was, I guarantee that I learned way more from them than they ever could have learned from me. But the sad part about it is, you know, this was a class for special needs kids. Most of them just kind of had a learning disability. But I really think that if they would have had somebody at home just to kind of sit down with them on a regular basis, go through homework day in and day out, double check their work, just kind of make sure that whatever they learned in school was being reinforced at home, I really think each one of those students could have gotten out of our class. But that just opened up my eyes to a whole nother aspect of where our world is today, that parents aren't really, not in all, but some parents aren't really putting in the work that it takes for their kids to be successful later on in life. Even though these were second and third graders, you know, that's where the foundation starts. So, you know, it's good to get those second and third graders, and even earlier than that, in a good study habit when they come home and getting their work done before they do anything else, and making sure, you know, all their assignments are complete and done correctly, so that when they do go back to school the next day, they have the confidence that, you know, what I did last night was right. And when they see it come up on a test or later on down the line, they'll feel confident that they know it because they studied it and they have that foundation that was instilled in the earlier grade levels as well as at home. So I really feel that if some of the parents were actually taking a little bit more time and sitting down, that, you know, a lot of these kids could have gotten out of our class. And I know that, you know, a lot of the parents were single parents, we're working multiple jobs, so the home dynamic as well played a very key factor in it. A lot of them didn't have a father in the house, no real man to look up to or to take, you know, to see that two-parent household. And it, I'm sure it affected the kids in multiple ways. But, and I'm sure, you know, like I said, being in a single-parent household and having a mother who has to work multiple jobs, it does prevent that parent from doing homework and things of that nature, because they're trying to, she or he is trying to keep a roof over their kid's head. So, you know, in that regard, I understand. But it's just the situation that our, this generation is faced with as far as the family structure and the family dynamic and how it affects kids coming up. And I don't think we will actually know 100% the turnout until the next couple of years, maybe next decade or so, when these kids are actually, they grow up and are actually, you know, come out of college and are forced to start being the foundation of our up and coming leaders of America, and just kind of see how they handle things. So it'll be very interesting how things play out within the next decade or so.
Yeah, I'm interested to see that as well with the, I guess, with the way that the different images of society and how they're shaping them right now, it's going to take a strong family, a stronger family unit than even before, for the kids to prosper and come into their own down the line. Now, I guess that really impacted, or I really, you know, helped to show you how, you know, the education system is, and maybe how the schooling system can benefit from having strong family like ties and you know, family bond at home, or parents to educate these children. Now, you said that you hit on something very important, in that if they would have had just a little bit more attention in the home, they may not have learning disabilities, or may be able to be able to overcome those learning disabilities. Now, why do you think that the home structure wasn't suitable for the children?
I think, well, you know, that just goes back to the family dynamic. And, you know, like I said, most of these kids were coming from single family homes. And not to say that, you know, by any means am I saying that a single parent can't raise a child. I mean that is definitely not the point I'm trying to drop home. But, you know, some of the single parents who were parents to our kids, you know, they were single parents, had multiple jobs. And a lot of times, you know, come nighttime, instead of being at home, you know, they were in survival mode. You know, they had to go out and go and work second and third jobs to keep a roof over their head. And a lot of times they had multiple kids and, you know, things of that nature. So the attention had to be spread around. It may not have been able to get put on our particular kid all the time, or the student that we were, that was in our class, because maybe that student had a couple of brothers or a couple of sisters that also may have required a little attention as well. And so, you know, it's just more of how it's just the home life and how things are going on at home. And, you know, like I said, if some of these kids would have gotten a little bit more attention, I really do think they could have overcome the disability that they were going through. Myself and the teacher who I worked with, we did as much as we could, and we definitely saw a big increase from the beginning of the year to where it was at the end. But that home structure definitely plays a huge factor in a child's development, and it's so important. We can only do so much on the academic side, but what they learn at home and that nurturing and love and support that they get at home also speaks volumes as well, and that's where parents have to step up and make sure that their kids are getting exactly the love, support, and attention that they need to be successful in life.
Right. Now, I know you had a great family foundation, and you praise your parents. Besides your parents, who would you point to as maybe that provide you guidance or served as a role model for you?
I would actually say, without mentioning my parents, just keeping them out of the loop, I would have to say my uncles. My four uncles, my dad's three brothers, and my mother's brother. These were all men who I looked up to and were all educated men. And because of them, I actually put a lot of pressure on myself to be successful, not that they ever did. My dad worked for IBM and got on with them as computers started getting big in the late 70s and early 80s, and been working with them ever since. My mother is a guidance counselor. My dad's three brothers. He has one brother who played in the NFL and also has a law degree. Has another one who has a dental degree, and another one who is a corporate lawyer for for a very large firm here in the States. And my mother's brother is an engineer. And so looking at all these successful men as I was growing up, you know, I put a lot of pressure on myself to be successful as well. They never did. All they wanted me to do was do well in school and just kind of be successful and study hard and work hard. But as I was coming up, I just always looked at them like, wow, you know, they made it. I have to make it. There's no choice. I have no choice. I have to be equally as successful. And I think that pressure that I put on myself kind of definitely drove me to where I am today. And just kind of made sure that I stayed on the right path to get here and, you know, beyond medical school or whatnot. So those four men are definitely the ones that I looked up to outside of my parents and definitely gave me a strong male presence in my life and also gave me some great role models to look up to because of their success in academics and in the community as well.
Oh, great, great, amazing. Well, our time has concluded today on the show. I thank you, Dr. Klingscale, for joining us and sharing with us your experience, your story, and it's
absolutely
hopefully serve as a motivation to some other young people out there. Tell
absolutely.
Mom and Dad I said hello and enjoy your trip. I know
you're going
overseas. Enjoy that trip, and we'll link up when you get back.
Sounds good. I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show, and can't wait to do it again.
Certainly. All right, brother.
Take care, brother. We'll be in touch.
All right, All right. Well, thank you for joining us on another episode of the Each One Reach One show. We would like to thank our lead sponsor, Pinnacle One. Join us next week, same time, for another inspirational story from a young professional African-American male.